Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to the Stay Up Podcast. My name is Jim Dacian. I'm author of the book Stay Up Los Angeles Street Art, and on the line with me, I have my good friend Stefan Clue, who is also the principal photographer for that book, and then is also my partner in an upcoming book on Shepherd Ferry. How you doing, Stefan? How are you this morning?
Oh, I'm just well. Good morning to all. Good day to all.
Yeah, and folks know you by Lord Jim, obviously, and Flickr friends and folks online. But we seem to sort of go back and forth with that name. As I've known you and as we've interacted in public, I've heard you called Jim, Mr. Clue, a number of names, and it's it never stops, does it?
Oh, what's in a name, huh? It's all fair. It's any which way you throw it at me, that's fine.
All right, cool. Well, I'm excited to be back on this podcast because we've had a hiatus over the last few months, and some recent news and things that have happened got both of us pretty excited. And this was Julian Marshall's new film, the short film called Obey the Giant, that recently went online and I think would be accurate to call viral. It's had quite a few downloads and a lot of folks talking, and Stefan and I were going to walk through the film and discuss it and critique it a bit, because I think both of us are, I don't think it's something that we've hidden, that we're both fans of Shepherd Ferry. We like the work that he's done, but at the same time, no one is above criticism, and discussions like this are always, I think, important for producing knowledge and understanding about the subjects that we care about. And I think this is a perfect example of this. And so I think the two of us are like-minded. Would you say that as well?
No, I think we're on the same page there, yeah.
Yeah. So let's jump into it. The film is very short, something that surprised me. It's roughly 18 minutes. It sort of initially just starts right away. I was actually surprised when I first saw it online. I watched it right away. And since then, I've watched a few times, had a few discussions online, which we've hosted. I didn't know what to expect. I think with anything, I think I probably had high expectations going into this. And that's never a good thing, especially when you look forward to sort of your favorite, one of your favorite subjects. So the movie starts in black and white. I believe it's a Lincoln. It seems to be driving down the streets of Providence. And it cuts to a man being thrown to the ground and another man accusing him of having sex with his wife. And he says something along the lines of, "Ray, what would you have me do? Let you walk?" And he says it sort of very forcefully and claims that this is an embarrassment and it makes him look weak. And what we realize is this is Buddy Ciciani, who is the mayor of Providence, Rhode Island. I think one of the longest standing government officials in U.S. history, something like 21 years. And someone who has been convicted quite a few times, one of assault and another of racketeering. And basically, the director, Julian Marshall, is sort of setting up the enemy in this scene. Lord Jim, what do you think of this sort of opening scene as the violence and sort of the black and white and the drama as it sort of initially unfolded?
An interesting pretext. So I'm not even sure if these were things that threw me a little about the film, because I don't have the background, or we didn't have the background. And it was a bit speculative in that sense. And for the sake of the film, perfectly valid and perfectly fine. In the context of the billboard or so, I wonder how much it figures into Shep's intent that he picked this one, that he picked the mayor. I'm not sure if he was privy to what a sleazeball he really was.
Mm. Yeah, because this is certainly setting up like a little guy versus the big, powerful man, and the man is obviously evil. He hurts people, and he also happens to be big himself. I mean, he's a pretty large guy, and I think I kind of agreed with you. I knew the story, obviously, from doing research, but then I was also surprised it started out like this. Like, this is the first character we see. And not only that, I was confused. Who the heck is he beating? I didn't know who this was. And after reading into it, I learned that this guy is a Rhode Island contractor. I mean, they called him Ray. And this is why the mayor was thrown out of office, because this was his when he was guilty of assault in 84. And when he was found guilty, you can't, you know, serve a public office and find guilty. So and they then after that, they do the slow motion as the verdict is read to us, as the mayor's walking down the courthouse stairs, and that he also must resign. So that sort of this little preamble that led up to than our protagonist. I mean, then it cuts right away to this. It first shows Obey the Giant as the title of the film, and it says 7 years later, and it opens up to the billboard. You know, it's a reelect, and he never stopped caring about Providence. And doing a little background research, I realized he had a television show and a radio show, and he was doing a lot of things in the community. But our protagonist is then their silk screening. You know, he has these big old headphones on. He's listening to rock music. It is kind of what we expect from the film, I think. This is like when the momentum is sort of like the things that symbolize, you know, art school or street art. And so he's silk screening the infamous Andre the Giant Has a Posse stickers. There's some cool music going on, and right away, sort of, someone tries to jiggle the handle to the classroom. It's a campus security, and it leads Shepard on sort of a chase, and he runs out the door and is tackled out in the quad right in front of the billboard, and sort of his papers go flying with Andre the Giant. So what did you think of Shepard being introduced this way?
Curious. It threw me at first, but really for obvious reasons, because you have this caricature. You have you have somebody playing Shep, which is so up a notch, and it seems so this is such a meta level somehow. The mayor, you know, introducing the mayor as sort of the placeholder or the stand-in for the establishment comes full circle right there. In the film you sort of get that it's the billboard, it's the size, it's the medium that attracts Shep, that the mayor was the subject of it. It could have been anybody else. So he's sort of like the perfect placeholder for what's wrong with it, what's, you know, the corruption and everything that goes, everything that's establishment. And yeah, it's novel because obviously it had to come to that. He's out there.
Yeah, you know, I found it, you know, as someone who works within a college, my frustrations were kind of funny. Like, who chases an art student out of the studio? I thought, you know, we're already establishing him sort of as a, you know, someone who gets in trouble all the time because street art is illegal or graffiti is illegal, and that's got to be part of his personality somehow. So even him doing schoolwork, that's got to be illegal.
And he's already got a complete setup there. That was the thing that threw me. I was expecting to find him, in a classroom of sorts, or that Shep is already so well in place, and that there's manifold images already there. So he's well into that campaign already. I think that's the relevant. He's really well known for it already. That's the point he's trying to make there.
Yeah, and sure, I can understand that. And that's a good argument that he's been doing this sort of thing for a while, and we're at least establishing a longer history, because it is a short film, and there's only so much you can say, and these little scenes have to pack in a lot, which is, I think, frustrating for folks sometimes. You know, you want to see something played out. This is certainly a story that could be played out much longer, and so these scenes that pack multiple layers and probably not as a, you know, sort of, we don't get to digest them and think about them as long on the film. So, yeah, but also I love that he's got these giant earphones on. I don't know if you noticed that, but I'm thinking 1990, he's got these big DJ headphones on. Mm-hmm. I think I had like a Discman back then, so I don't know. I don't remember them being quite like that, but perhaps that's what they were. But anyway, the security guards, and somehow he got out of that print studio. He ran downstairs, and two of them tackled him, which I thought was great, too. I can't I can't imagine him. He's a very slow runner, Shep. That's what he got chased down by two campus security at an art school. So the next scene cuts to, I think it's the dean's office. Did you read that as a dean or provost, the next fellow?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and we later find out his name is Carter, but I read it as a dean's office, and he's reading off sort of why he's in trouble, that the charge is breaking and entering, and Shepard is very sort of snapping. He says, "What did I break? Isn't it just entering?" He's being a sarcastic, sort of like fighting the guy. And he goes on to say that, illustration majors can't use the print studio. So there's that rule, or you can't use the print studio. And then that his sort of diatribe into why he doesn't like Shepard is that his work has no value. He's already on a 6-month academic probation. So we get to see that Shepard has a history at the school of rubbing administration the wrong way. Did you get that sense as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I thought it was kind of funny because at one point when he said, like, you're on 6-month academic probation, I kind of laughed to myself because I thought of the movie Animal House, where the dean, Dean Wormer, who's the bad guy there, says that the Animal House frat is on probation. They said, well, sir, they're already on probation. He says, well, they're on double secret probation. I felt like it was almost this ridiculous sort of like, you're on double secret probation, Shepard. Oh, man, what am I going to do now? Hard times for Shepard. That cuts to him in the dining hall, and he seems to be mulling over his food. And then one of his friends shows up, which I think we're introduced to his name a little bit later, but at this point we don't know who he is, but he's just a good buddy, obviously. It goes by the name Jonah at a later point in the movie. And he says, I heard you got arrested. And Shepard seems pretty excited about this. He went from sort of like being depressed to like, oh, really? People are saying that about me? It's sort of this, that was sort of our entry into, I guess, his social scene. Do you know much about this? What did you think about these relationships sort of with his friends and as they sort of head back to the studio that you alluded to before?
I can't say much to that. It's all part of the larger canon, if you will.
I thought it was strange. This is the part where it was, where I think folks might think it got a little cheesy. And I think it's because they love street art. And they love that world, and you know what it's like in real life, and then when you see it on a movie screen, it can never really look the same. But they head back to that studio, and there's a half pipe, there's Andre stickers and posters everywhere, mixed with sort of random graffiti, and I thought it was like the bat cave for street artists. In the meantime, he picks up his books to head out there, and he left like 6 papers just sort of haphazardly on the table. There's so much going on. They're printing T-shirts. There's a guy, making little sculptures. It was sort of like little dream studio. And I also wondered, why is he sneaking into the illustration department to make silkscreen stickers when he has the same setup here?
Right.
Yeah, it's sort of like a warehouse, I guess, skate park / studio. And as I watched again, I thought there's these little odd things that were happening. There's a guy carving crosses, there in the corner. I don't know, just sort of this random, the art school personalities. He was like the long-haired goth guy. And he had the skateboards that almost looked a little fluorescent in the way they were reflecting. It was very dark in the place too. I got the feeling he was trying to put this is seedy, this is underground. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong there. I don't know. What do you think?
This was one of the points where I started asking first, like, how properly was the film vetted? Like how much did they try to stay true to the original? How big was Shep's contribution to it in terms of providing details and background, or is it all just based on the legend and lore on the facsimile of it all? the food unit stuff. But it was an interesting point because right there you saw that he's actually within art school already sort of a misfit. He's not trying to conform to what's the agenda, what he's being asked to. No, he skates. He does his thing already right there and then. And there's an entirely different vibe in this country. This counterpoint to others struggling and thinking and these art school drones, whereas he just skates through it, so to say.
Oh, that's an interesting point. I mean, yeah, to think of skateboarding and graffiti street art all being these subcultures, but also him being in this very prestigious art school for folks that aren't aware of the role RISD has. It's consistently ranked in like one of the top five art schools in the country. It's pretty prestigious. And so, yeah, that sort of relationship is interesting, sort of the counterculture and also the mainstream academia. And that leads us to like sort of the next point. Then he's walking outside with Jonah and they're talking about roles in the art world. And I thought this was actually a pretty important conversation for the development of the film because we're already a few minutes into it. And they're talking about hierarchy in the art world and where you rank and how important that is. Nothing about sort of concept or something along those lines or how good of an artist you are, but it was almost like they said a popularity contest and you want to be known. Yeah, and it seems like Shepard's, by placing those stickers everywhere, you would think he's already onto this sort of thing, right? Because he's putting them everywhere and certainly supposedly far into the street art campaign. And he asks his friend, so where do I rank in all this? And he says, Shepard, no one knows you exist. Which I thought was, maybe that should have been a conversation his freshman year, but it didn't seem like that was applicable at that moment. I think that's what you were alluding to before. Am I correct?
Yeah. So, I mean, the role of the misfit, so to say, like how out of place he already was. And then the larger question that this poses to me was very simply how concerted was the campaign as such. So in other words, did he outset to proliferate, or did he just really set out to let's see what happens if I just carpet bomb it all? That's a really interesting and seminal question in the larger context. Like how concerted was the effort to proliferate? Was it just because I could and in passing? Is this a thought through effort that essentially manifests itself each and every day? And how do you refer back from the icon to the Andre, to the artist? And is it relevant? How much does it matter? And does it matter to you or the spectator? Or what does it matter? These are all questions that are posed right there already.
Yeah, that development is tough to show. And the way we saw it, it seemed pretty simple. It didn't seem like Shepard was a – I didn't get the feeling that he didn't come across as like a real deep thinker in the film, which I think is problematic because I think he's a really smart guy and he's someone who's thought a lot about this. And he's built that myth up himself along the way. But – I felt like the dialogue between the character of Shepard Fairey in this, he was more reactionary, or at least that's the way I understood it. I mean, he reacted to an assignment, he reacted to his friend saying he's not ranked, he reacted to his buddy who called it a hollow image. I guess part of me wanted to see more from that character and see more sort of come from inside at the end rather than him reacting to sort of the art school people around him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. But this is something that this conversation, this dilemma still exists today. We still have this conversation. How concerted is it and how large is the theoretical approach to the campaign? If it is exclusively theoretical or so, it would validate it on an entirely different level. If you look just at the punk aspect or the maker aspect or so, that turns it into a somewhat different direction. And it would be interesting, it would be interesting to sort that out.
That's interesting. You know, I'm also reminded of, he seemed like Shepard does this quite often, where he defends himself online. He'll put out this a statement that, you know, people are calling him a sellout, or that whatever the sort of the flavor of critique of the month is. He's not afraid to come out and sort of state why he believes things a certain way. We've seen him do it in the Huffington Post, et cetera. And I've always read it like, part of me thinks, why do you need to defend yourself? I've never felt he's needed to. Just be proud of what you do. And there's always going to be people who don't like that. But I've always read it, there's like, I guess we all have it. We all have these certain insecurities that he feels like he has to go out and state it. And perhaps that's a way to read into sort of like reacting to peers and these sort of conversations as well. But anyway, it got me thinking as you were talking. So the next scene, as we move on, is the classroom. He's in an art class. We don't know what class it is, but it's a fortune cookie assignment. And the
Yes.
professor says you need to illustrate whatever fortune it is. And apparently this is a big deal because he goes back to the studio and he's sort of staring at this his fortune cookie. Do you remember? It said it's a or it says the actual fortune said to affect the quality of the day is no small
Most
achievement.
small, yeah.
What did you read out of that, or what was your reaction after you read that fortune cookie?
It's stunningly beautiful because you have this serendipitous moment that essentially guides the entire campaign. These the meanings that are being superimposed on something shallow or hollow or open to query, and it's just for him to pick that is such a beautiful picture for really almost in a larger context in art history or so. That you have this maker moment sort of sent down to him in form of a simple fortune cookie and in form of this assignment that has such large consequences then. I loved it. I
Yeah,
think
I
the quote
agree.
in itself is just spot on.
Yeah,
Just
I agree with
summarizes
you
so
there.
much of,
Yeah, I'm right on board with you because I felt it was also one of the stronger aspects of the film, and this is a nice opportunity to blend sort of the academic and then his personal project. And you know, the assignment and that idea and that glimpse of the classroom, I thought was a perfect way to do it, and not a stereotypical way of like what art school is. It was actually quite nice. And I love the kid sitting. I don't know if you noticed the kid sitting next to him. He had his knees tucked up against his chin. So, I mean, they even tried to show a little bit of the awkward and the strangeness of art school students, and how bizarre it can be with those sort of small details. So from there, he's in the studio staring at his image of Andre and the fortune cookie. And that's when that goth rocker that you sort of implied. Said it's a hollow image, and why don't you put it on something hollow? And that's where he gets the idea of the billboard, apparently, and he heads to the photocopy center or the copy center on campus. And as he's in there, it's you know one of the guys is asleep at the table, the other one just looks bored out of his mind. And then they also introduce this is the second time they introduce this woman, the woman he saw in the cafeteria. One of the students, it cuts to her in her dorm, and she has a sticker on her bag. And I have to say, like, I thought this character was the most awkward out of all of them because I felt it's a short film. Why are we introducing her? What role does she have? And it bugged me until the very end, and she pulls, I guess she pulls it, he pulls it back together. But were you confused at all by this, the female character in this movie?
Very much so, yeah, absolutely. I figured she would have like a much larger role also. Same for the same reason. The film is so condensed and it's a rather complex story trying to, you know, squeeze into 20 minutes. And there's no room for gratuitous appearances. So yeah, same thing here. She threw me at
Yeah,
first.
I was thinking, is she a love interest? And you know, is she the mayor's daughter? Which I thought again, there wasn't like a lot of hints there in terms of what role she plays. But she did have a dorm that could see the billboard, so that was important. So he is making copies, obviously smaller copies, to form the Andre face. And while in the copy center, he gets behind it and rigs the machine, so he doesn't have to pay for all the copies. And he ends up only paying for six, and the guy sort of smirks at him. Six copies? How'd you do that? Sort of, and again, another glimpse of sort of like going to any level, and I guess also earning him maybe some credibility that, and he's a real criminal in essence. I mean, did you feel like that? Are these important details you think to include in the film of him sort of ripping off the copy center?
Yeah, absolutely. Not so far as to motive or so, but we've all done that. And that's the beauty of it, that it's circumventing, messing with the system already. And no, that he hit Kinko's is sort of a dot on the my. It's quite curious.
And that's how a lot of artists made their copies at the Kinko's or the copy center. So it's a pretty typical thing, and it actually came off kind of humorous. I thought it was funny. And there wasn't a lot of comedy in it, but I feel like even with any serious topic, you need a little bit of that. So Shep in the next scene and Jonah, his buddy, are driving in their ultra cool station wagon down the alley, and this is when they're going to take on the billboard. And so right away, they both put their hoods on at the same time, and they sneak over to the billboard, and Shepard climbs up, and Jonah seems to be, he's holding the materials. He's going to help rope him up. And I guess being a little bit of a lookout there, Shep gets to the top, and it's really kind of funny because he gets to the top, and there's a security guard right there in the street. I guess he's just not facing the right way. He starts walking the other way, and kind of the element of danger and all that. And then he starts applying the paster at one small square at a time after they lift the wheat paste up there. And it seems to be taking a long time to get that wheat paste up on that that billboard. Then we have another one of those awkward cuts to the girl asleep, just because her view of the billboard. And then we're back to them climbing down the billboard, and then some headlights sort of shine on them, and they run away. And that's it. I mean, that was kind of the epic moment, or at least the high danger at that point, and certainly something an act that is can earn you a lot of fame. We know billboards are a high profile spot to take on. What'd you think of Julian's take on this, and how he sort of dramatized the billboard takeover?
I think the whole film is trying to make exactly that point. It's this this moment in time when something very seminal happens, and it's right there and then. This is important in hindsight. It back even then it was this act of defiance or so. It just was. Just punk, but now in retrospect or so, and in the larger conversation or so, this is one of those key moments in art where something very seminal and something very relevant and important happens that we simply can't foresee, or where the consequences simply aren't in the gesture as such.
And I think it's always hard to show the artistic process on film, because it never happens in a straightforward manner, A to B. And whenever we try to show it in a story, whether it's Lust for Life of Vincent van Gogh, the movie Pollock, we want to see that, because making art is like making magic in a way. But actually watching it in real time is not as exciting. But we do have these myths in our head, like how art is created. And certainly this is one of the more sexier and exciting ways to make art, and the type of art that's meaningful to a lot more people. And I think it's difficult to do it. And I don't think there would be a way to satisfy us either in doing that. You almost just got to hint at it and then leave the rest up to our imagination and how it happened. And they did a bit of that. The running away from the headlights was a bit much for me. But overall, I felt like, okay, they built some drama. We know what it's going to be, but they didn't show it to us. And I think they left enough to our imaginations that, you want to watch. And we're like, okay, so now what's going to happen? Something's going to happen. It's going to hit the fan here eventually. And I think it did, obviously, here in the next few scenes. So it's the next morning, sort of the birds chirping, and it's no longer night. And obviously a big contrast from the scene before. And Shep's buying a paper in the morning. He seems very relaxed. And they also show the girl again as she sort of wakes up in the morning. So again, they keep going back to her, which bugs me. And we assume it's the next day, I think, and he is in a crit class, and all the students are putting their projects up from that exercise where they got the fortune cookie. And he is just at that moment tearing the article out of the paper and pins it up on the critique board. Meanwhile, so the drama is building. We see that same Lincoln again that we saw in black and white at the beginning with the mayor buddy as he pulls up to the billboard, and we get the, you know, very close shots as he's sort of going to see, he's going to see this billboard, and they're showing us little glimpses of the details, like Andre has a posse, sort of the thing he's holding up with his hand, and we see a little bit of detail of the face. And then we're greeted with the mayor just swearing as he sees a full shot of the billboard. And it's a fairly dramatic one, and you can see Andre the Giant has a posse. It says a height and weight, and then it says Andre, and it covers up the mayor's name, never stop caring about Providence. So pretty dramatic sort of build up to the actual work of art. And at the same point, the professor is just starting into the critique at the same time. So what'd you think of the mayor's reaction, that sort of that big F-bomb that he threw out?
Yeah, in the conversation, that's when you saw that. Jim?
Say that again, Stefan? Yeah.
You mean just the conversation that Shepton has with the mayor, or just when he sees it for the first time?
I'm thinking about when he first saw it for the, you know, when he first saw it for the first time, the build up to the actual billboard, and sort of like it just sort of, he seemed really distressed and upset about it, and it was kind of like that critical moment.
Yes, to him it becomes obvious that something is catching up to him. So he's guilty. He's already put on the spot. And the mayor is the first to recognize that, essentially, that and to superimpose that that critique on him already into this image is just the default knee-jerk reaction that only can come from the mayor and for physics.
Yeah, and the shot that follows that is a much more subdued one, and I actually thought it was the coolest shot of the entire film. It's all the students looking into the camera as though it's the clipping of newspaper that Shepard put on the critique board, and the professor seems a little confused, and he says, is it a collage? Is it found art? Is it some sort of commentary? And right in the middle, there's like just a sliver of space for Shepard's face to be there, and he says, no, I did it. I did that billboard. And I just thought, to me, out of the entire movie, I thought that was one of the neatest angles and conversations that happened. And then it cuts right away to him running across campus again, the same shot, basically, in the beginning of the film. And this time he's bumping into people along the way. Again, he's not a very good runner. And he runs up into his studio/skate park. And he tells his buddy that, hey, we got to start hiding stuff or get rid of the stuff because they're in trouble. They know who we are. And the two of them they're collecting, which is one, there's a really big stencil, bigger than, the small photocopies that he was making. And there's this, what I find out is like the limo driver. And he looks like a policeman or a Gestapo guy, but he's walking down the hall very slowly, and you can hear the footsteps. And eventually, it's a knock on the door. His buddy Jonah hides. Like, he really gives himself up. He's like, hey, you're on your own, man. And Shepard answers the door, and the guy says, Mr. Ferry, I assume you know what this is in regards to. And he goes, yeah, I think in a very classic way, I have no idea. Part of me just was so irritated by that, you know, that, oh, come on, you know, it's so dramatic, and that, you know, they caught up with him. Everybody knows he does the figure, Andre the Giant piece, and he's obviously not ashamed to tell people that. It seems like he really was sort of letting everybody know the whole movie that he was doing this thing, but then at the same time, he never thought about, you know, getting caught like that, or it didn't bother him, apparently, that to take on the mayor. I mean, what did you think of that? I read it as an arrest at first. I thought it was a policeman. I didn't realize until the second time I watched it that that was kind of the henchman for the mayor, the limo driver.
But that's what it looked like. Same thing. I remember just the gesture when he opens the door. It has this massive Andre on it, and it opens the door, and behind it is that city stooge. That yeah, it really just looks like an authority stand-in for anything. And the reaction is important. You don't give up to authority that easy. You don't just reach out your hands and come willingly. No, you sly your way out of first.
Yeah, I thought, why wouldn't he climb out the window or hide himself or do something? He really gave himself up there. Then he's like, "All right, you got me. You can't. You knocked on the door. I'll answer it."
Yeah. Saw that coming.
Yeah, that. Yeah, well, maybe they just had a few minutes left in the film, so they had to wrap it up pretty quick. But it does say it did seem a little out of character to do something like that, or at least that's what I would have assumed. But again, it takes us to the next scene, which we need to see, which is sort of a very climatic scene between the mayor and Shepard, and Shepard sitting in his office, and then we can see that same limo driver slash guard behind him, and the mayor sort of lecturing him, and he's very angry, and he even says, "My daughter knew it was you." Again, that was the first time I thought maybe his daughter is the girl, but again, no such connection. And and Shep is really apologetic. He seems to be like a little school kid. He's actually scared of this guy, where he's really cocky with the dean. He knew the dean couldn't hurt him, but apparently he seemed a little bit worried. Again, I wasn't sure if I wanted that, if I thought he should be defiant and strong, because we kind of know him as that kind of guy, but he seemed very apologetic. And this conversation ensues, like, what's with this Andre the Giant thing? And Shepard gives like an art school answer that it's a commentary on meeting or media and exposure, et cetera. And the mayor just tells him to shut up. And they go back and forth. He goes, "Don't talk to me like some museum docent," which I thought was a great line. And he finally gets to the sort of what it really was about. And Shepard says, "Well, it was on TV, and I thought it was funny." And he goes, "Exactly." And so it's sort of like he was breaking down Shepard, sort of like, what is this really about? And so he really seemed to be in control. He wasn't. I felt like this is the first time the mayor wasn't like this one-dimensional character that is just like the big evil guy that beats people up and goes to jail. But he actually seemed to have some smarts about him in this conversation. I mean, how did you take that
Yeah, and he's
conversation to go?
content with that answer. It's almost like that just explains it to him. You're just screwing with me, right? There is no larger agenda. You're just one of those punks, and he's content with that answer. So the easy way out is just as well. And the major then becomes this jovial sort of partner in crime almost. It's like, well, we all speak in the same language. We cheat and we weasel our way out whenever we can. And he sort of, it's that wink, that nod. I was curious about that conversation, if that took place and if that was the nature of it. I think that's a pretty big deal to be called upon by the mayor and queried by him. I wonder how true that was and what exactly was the nature of that conversation, how that came about. This gives so much room, so much wiggle room for interpretation again in the larger conversation that I think I'd like to hear that from Shep himself as a first person account. Before it completely becomes lore and folklore.
Yeah, I would agree with you too, because I'd say as the movie went on more and more, the less I believed. And I felt like it was really strained far from the way I understood this story, because it supposedly happened twice. The billboard got covered up, and Shepard went back again and did it a second time. And the way we saw it in the movie was what was there the second time. So I don't know. I didn't know that this type of conversation even happened. I didn't know he sat down with the mayor, and part of me doesn't think he ever did. I mean, why would this guy even want to sit down with him? It's sort of it's a demeaning thing to do, like address a college student about something like this, a practical joke, which you would read it as a practical joke.
The only explanation I think could come up with, essentially, or so the way I tried to explain it to myself was very simply that the mayor needed to get to the bottom of things for himself. What the heck is this all about? And when he concedes, or when he then says, "You're just screwing with me," and he takes that, is this like the first time the campaign has been queried and questioned on from the authorities on a larger level, so to say? Is that the point the scene is trying to make? I think it confused me more than it helped.
Okay. Yeah, and the sort of the ending sort of that the mayor left with him was the only point of attention is to get more attention. You know, and he said that was basically his philosophy, you know, that, you know, when he runs for mayor, it's not really, you know, when the vote finally happens, it's more like a party or a coronation than it is sort of a contest, because everybody already knows who he is. And he said with the Andre, people are going to think of you. They're not going to think of Andre the Giant. And so as though he was giving him sort of this bit of knowledge to take with him. In a way, and then at the same time said, "Stop it! Don't do it anymore." Yeah. Sort of authoritarian. You're like, you're messing up Providence, in a way. And then, of course, later we see one of his stickers underneath his desk, which was really kind of funny. We skip to outside. The next scene is outside. Shep's watching the billboard getting cleaned. And then that girl walks up and sits down next to him. Again, I think this is the only time it finally made sense of why. And apparently she was in that same class. And she said, you know, you ran out of class. And he said, well, it was kind of hard getting chased by the police or whatnot. And she basically lets him know that she got an A. Shep got an A in the class or that for that assignment, which was a big deal. This is when they show the mayor's office with the sticker, and you know, then the film ends with some really great rock and roll music and gives us some little, like, it was based off a true story and gives us some details about each person's life. And with the mayor, they make sure to mention that the mayor went to jail, you know, sort of solidifying him as the bad guy in this. And that Shepard is awesome, you know, at the end. It's basically he took his street art campaign on a global scale. He has a work in the National Portrait Gallery, obviously being the Obama Hope portrait, and that he is the most prolific and controversial street artist of all time. And then sort of some rap music starts on. And I just thought that was, I thought those were really funny clips at the end. They're almost like what we expect at the end of films, but it felt a little over the top, though, as well. How do you think it ended?
Along those lines, it sort of validated the instincts and ties up the whole narrative. What I really loved was the line that the girl says, that the art school, that the class could not find a reason not to give him an A, which sort of is a recurring motive when we approach Shep's work or so. It's not so much on its own merits, but why not? Why? Well, obviously, this is a pretty big gesture, but they all had to. They all struggled with it. They all had to wrap their head around the whole idea, the concept. It was so new and so provocative that you had to debate why not to give him an A, not why to give him an A. Why not? That was a nice touch that sort of summarized things to come.
Yeah, I agree, and again, that hits back, I think, on one of the chords that was so good about it. The classroom aspect I thought was really good in connecting it. I think those were some of my favorite parts, and so that certainly that comment wrapped that section of it up. You know, so overall, I thought, you know, it was a sharp film. I mean, for a student, the student who made the film or just has graduated from RISD. And raised the funds to do this. And I know he had support from Shepard Fairey and Obey along the way. But I mean, it really was a very slick film. There was good characters. I grew used to sort of not seeing Shepard Fairey, sort of like the skinny Adrian Brody type guy as Shepard Fairey. And that didn't bother me so much. And I thought the mayor, the second time I watched it, I thought the mayor was much better than I gave him credit for. Especially towards the end. I think I had more problems with some of the other characters. You know, Shepard's friend, I think, cheesed it up a little bit with
the looking underneath the billboard back and forth, and perhaps he wasn't as strong in that role. But again, he had a very small role. But I thought it was just it's really exciting. Anytime you put an artist on screen or a story, I think it's a good thing. And I thought it was an awesome development to see something like this finally made into like a small movie. So overall, I was very pleased with that, you know, even though there were some shortcomings along the way. What'd you think?
Yeah, again, it does feel icky because we're so conditioned or so used to the documentary approach of it all. There's very little left open to interpretation. It is what it is, and especially in Sepp's case. So, you want to try to be as close to the material and as close to the narrative as possible. It felt a little cartoonish, and the mayor in large part contributed to that. I thought he was really about as much a cartoon or a caricature as the Andre image itself. So it was a spot-on match and very, very fitting. It made that point. But it also detracts or distracts from the story behind it. I think I'm more interested in the documentary, the real narrative, but also recognizing this is something that's lost in many versions of that situation, that theme. Now, this is 30 years after, and then some. Again, it becomes folklore. It becomes that story itself is a meme, this port of entry. And I'd leave it at that.
Yeah, no, I understand exactly what you're saying. I would agree with you. I mean, if we're going to make a documentary of this, I mean, I would by far enjoy something like that more. And I think I had just to let things go a bit with this, because initially my reaction was like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. This is so frustrating, you know, because I felt like I've studied this person for a long time. I've written a lot about them. You know, I wanted to see more truth, and I felt as though I was being fed something that wasn't true. And that frustrated me. And I thought, why do you need life rights for something that's not true? You know, that's sort of my initial reaction. And when I saw that log being swung against the contractor in the opening scene, I'm like, oh, yeah, right. But apparently that actually happened. Like, that was part of the thing that actually happened. I think from there on it was tough for me to believe. And so I think that's why folks read it as cheesy. I think the more you're associated with street art or graffiti, the more that's going to hurt. And the more it's going to feel like this is not what it's like. And just like when we see a very inspirational movie that may be based on something true, but, you know, we have to add those extra elements to make the story interesting enough to be on screen like this. So, yeah, I think that's I seem to be wrestling with the same sort of frustrations, but at the same time, I felt like if I saw it a few weeks ago, I let that emotion, I guess, to the side and just sort of like, okay, it is what it is. It's not true. It's a drama. And I can accept it in a much better light in that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but that's you, and therein probably lies the problem, that these fictionalized, these dramatizations of rather important events or characters sort of create this ultimate version of it. So this is now set in stone. This is this becomes now canon, so to say. And it just feels icky to a degree. It feels like missing the point, or even how necessary is that? Isn't it better relegated to a port of entry for a conversation? Isn't it better debated rather than creating a narrative and a timeline that we then ask to take at face value? That's what left me empty, or what left me wondering about it.
Okay.
So I'd much rather hear that story told from Shep, so to say, than by proxy. I think that's my theory.
So what do you think Shepard thinks of this film? Is this something that he feels is promoting that myth in a way that he wants to be promoted? I mean, because they were behind this. and it has their stamp of approval. He sent out messages and tweeted it and Facebook. He did everything he could to promote this and know that he's behind it. And having some experience with sort of like whether he's behind something or not makes a difference. I mean, I don't know. It adds another element to it. I mean, what do you think of his support of it?
Oh, clearly, but at the same time, it goes to the larger concept. You know, you just contribute to the bigger picture in small pieces. I don't know how happy he can be with it. It's himself being portrayed, which we have to ask him. We simply have to query him, and his stamp of approval it goes only so far. It doesn't. You know that he will give the filmmaker as much license as he needs to see his vision through. That he supports it and makes himself available as the subject is an entirely different story. So the film, the filmmaker needs some room in there. And I'm certain Shep gave that to him.
Yeah.
So, but if it got his approval, I would want to assume that the conversation with the mayor, for example, took place and that it was to that extent and to that matter. That's the aspect that approval inserts to me.
Yeah. Well, it'd certainly be interesting to follow up with him and to see what he thinks about that. And I hope that that type of conversation could happen eventually, because that's, I mean, I'm so tired of seeing the same interviews with him that sort of recycle the same old, same sort of knowledge, when there's a lot of stuff that's been uncovered here that could make for some very interesting discussions in terms of how he manages this this brand of Obey, the myth of that story, and actually a lot of the myths, I think, behind the sticker campaign in general. I think we haven't had many voices speak into that. So it certainly, hopefully, will uncover some more things to pull apart. But anyway, it was fun. It was fun to actually go through a film like this, and I'm glad it exists for the reason of getting us to talk about something like this. I think it's a lot of fun. Any final thoughts on it?
No, that's you hit the nail on the head. This is what all these things are good for. What every piece of controversy, you know, every arrest, every new piece, every new mural, everything, it always adds to the conversation. We're talking about it, and that's important. And I think that's in Shep's interest, or that would be something that finds his approval.
Well,
overall,
I
think the verdict is still out. We there's a couple of really tough questions that haven't been asked and raised in that slice of, you know, history. But to its credit, you can't deliver that. You can't do that. And so the film as a little time capsule also works and functions. That I think that's what that to its credit.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see something similar to this in a feature film eventually. With his, someone doing a major motion picture. I can only see it, and I feel like this is just a little taster in terms of sort of what's the appetite of the public for something like this, and putting that out online for all to see, I think is a good way to test the audience. So it would not surprise me to see something like this develop, and they can learn from this, I think. There's some things they could pull from to make a much more successful film. So, but with that, I think it's probably a good place for us, Dan, because this has been a good conversation. I appreciate you coming on, Stefan Clue, as AKA Lord Jim, and I look forward to working with you on the new book with Shepard Fairey that comes out in a few months. So I appreciate all your help on that. And, thank you so much. So let me sign off here for a second. But do you have anything else you want to add?
No. Thanks for the opportunity. And all good.
Oh, good. It was always a pleasure. It's always fun to talk to you. You're one of my favorite people. And it's always the conversations never cease to be fun. So for folks who are interested in more podcasts, which we will have a few more coming up in the coming weeks, Be sure to follow the Stay Up Facebook site. But in the meantime, we hope you keep in touch with us. And if you have questions yourself about the movie or about future episodes or folks you'd like to see interviewed or discussions, send us a note on the Facebook site. So we look forward to catching up with all of you next time. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.